Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Can't hear records on my demo. Did y'all boys not get the memo? I do not stay at the Intercontinental. And anything I got is not a rental. I own that motherfucker. Figure it out.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to a Victory Monday edition of Jetstream Radio, your favorite podcast's favorite podcast. And I am joined tonight, as always, by my host, the best in the world, Paulie Bruzy. Paulie, how's it going, brother?
What is going on? Another Victory Monday. Holidays prevented us from being able to link up last week to get a show in, travel and planning and late-minute shopping. So we missed last week, but we're glad to be back with you again. Five-game winning streak with a win-in, get-in scenario next week. Can't be more pumped than right now.
No, absolutely. And you know what? Here we are, right? Entering week 17, Jets, Bills, with the Jets having an opportunity. All they need to do is beat Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills on Sunday, and they are headed to the playoffs. Now, there's a bunch of different scenarios out there, but this is probably the as simple as you can absolutely keep it. Jets win, and they're in. Now, there's a lot of other matchups going on around them that will determine who they can play come, not next weekend, but the weekend after that. But all of that would not have been possible had they not gone out and taken care of business yesterday against the hated and division rival New England Patriots. Jets came out on fire, went up 14-17-3, and then you saw a strip sack on Fitz that led to a touchdown. They cut it to 17-10. Then you saw Brady do what Brady does, you know, essentially what he's done his entire career. That's why he's arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. And he marched the team back, and he was able to tie this up. And then one of the most, and Paulie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, one of the most confusing, and I will say it now, and I said it then so it's not hindsight, one of the most boneheaded decisions that you will ever see anybody make. And the Patriots win the toss in overtime, and they elect to kick to the Jets and not allow Brady to get an opportunity to lead his team down the field to win this game. And we all know what happens next. The Jets go 5 plays, 80 yards, and Fitzpatrick hits Decker in the back of the end zone. Decker absolutely cooked Malcolm Butler in the back of the end zone for a fade, game-winning walk-off touchdown. Jets win 26-20. They improve to 10-5. Their first winning season in 5 years, their first 10-win season in 5 years. And, Paulie, just take me through what you thought of the Jets being able to knock off the Patriots. It's a big win. And, you know, around here, you're a Michigan man. So, you know, if you're going to be the coach of the Wolverines, you need to be able to beat the Buckeyes. If you're going to be the coach of the Bears, you need to be able to beat the Packers. In order to be successful here, you need to beat the Patriots. And Bowles did that. Was able to slip with them his first year. Just what did you think of the victory yesterday by the Jets?
Well, the victory was fantastic. I mean, you know, everything on the line, you know, backs against the wall. You know, they lost the lead. They didn't panic. The game was tied. You know, Fitz after, you know, which many seem to think is a boneheaded call on, you know, for them to kick. I thought it was crazy at first. Sitting down almost a day later now and seeing that in 2013 the Patriots kicked off first and it worked out for them. This year Mike Zimmer with the Vikings decided to kick off and it worked out for them. In this instance, it didn't work out for the Patriots, and that's fantastic. My house was a little weird yesterday. For those of you who don't know, many of you do know, my wife is a diehard Patriots fan, and obviously I am a diehard Jets fan. Before the game didn't matter because they were already in the playoffs. When it was halftime, the game didn't matter because they were already in the playoffs. When the game was tied in the fourth quarter, you would have thought they were the team that was fighting for a playoff spot. And then when Decker caught the touchdown from Fitz over Malcolm Butler, well, we're not fighting for a playoff spot, so the game didn't matter. So it was It was a lot of emotions. I actually ended up going upstairs. I couldn't be around anybody, so I watched the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter in overtime upstairs, and everybody else stayed downstairs. But just a good win. We've seen this team throughout this winning streak have adversity and get over it. The Giants game, come back and win. Last week, the struggles in Dallas, come back and win. Yesterday, losing the lead but pulling it out in overtime with, if you want to call it the assist from them choosing to, kick to us. But, it was nice that, for me, I don't know about you and everybody else out there, but we got the ball to start overtime, and I was like, we're winning this game. I had confidence, and that's what Ryan Fitzpatrick has brought here. Whether or not you're on Team Fitz, you're off Team Fitz, if you're not on Team Fitz by now, I don't know what's wrong with you. But what he's brought to the quarterback position for this franchise in this 1 year is just stability, confidence, and a calmness. He didn't look panicked at all on that last drive, on that drive in overtime. And it's just, it's a confidence factor. Not only does he believe in it, the players believe in it, the coaches believe in him, and now the fans are completely believing in him. And it just felt good to know that Fitz had the ball, and I thought we were winning that game right when we got it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I even tweeted it out. All right, Fitz, let's just go win this thing. Because I think that a lot of people, and shout out to the Patriot fan base, as you guys gave me a ton of stuff to favorite for when we beat your ass on playoffs on. But I think that a lot of Patriots fans, and they ran that gamut of emotions. It was this game doesn't really matter. And then when you saw the injuries kind of pile up and Belichick kind of took his foot off the gas a little bit towards the end of the second half, you saw a lot of them say, oh, well, we're just trying to get out of there, with no injuries. And I get that's what you do as a fan, right? Like, you kind of rationalize these things. But the Patriots still don't have home field advantage or a first-round bye locked up. So
I just wanted to correct you. They do have a first-round bye. They just don't have home field through the playoffs yet.
They don't have home field. They do have a first-round right. So I think that they still have something to play for. I love the conspiracy theories for people who say, well, they did that because they'd rather the Jets make the playoffs in Pittsburgh because they're afraid of Pittsburgh. Okay, sure. So Bill Belichick and Tom Brady were arguably
Bill Belichick doesn't fear anyone.
Exactly. And these are two of the most competitive entities in all of sports, and you mean to tell me that they decided they would much rather see a Jets team that played them better than Pittsburgh did 15 weeks ago? I think that's laughable. I think that it was a great win for the Jets. I think it's a signature win for the Jets in a season of signature wins, because this is what the Jets have done. They've beaten the Cowboys, who a lot of people peg to be a Super Bowl contender in the NFC. They beat the Giants, who arguably have the worst fan base in all of social media, and it's a fan base who only rivals the Patriots in terms of, like, making excuses and things like that. And so you were able to beat them on the arm of Fitz, right, on the arm of a quarterback who's been much maligned, the quarterback who a lot of his fan base would rather he put his arm through a wall than see them lead this team right now. So he was able to do that, and then now you go out and on a fifth game-winning drive once again, you go and you beat the New England Patriots, and that's how you make your mark around here. Now, does this mean that Fitzpatrick is suddenly going to decide to not throw 5 interceptions next week? No. But what it does mean is that as of right now, there is no quarterback right now in Jets history that has played better than Ryan Fitzpatrick in 2015. That's what that means. It has nothing to do with the Dan Marino fake spike. It has nothing to do with anything crazy other than right now, the Jets have their best starting quarterback ever, and they have their best wide receiver duo ever, because it's funny, all you heard after the first matchup was that Bill Belichick takes away your best option, and Brandon Marshall came out there and he cooked everybody on him. Anybody. They tried to cover him with Malcolm Butler, they beat him. Tried to cover him with Logan Ryan, they beat him. They tried to cover him with some kid that I think they called up because of the injuries. They called him up from his practice squad and made him active, and he beat him too. There's even one catch that he caught that Bowles didn't challenge, but it was clearly a catch on the sideline. Brandon Marshall had a hell of a game. The Jets defensive line, who, again, it's been talked about enough by Paulie and I throughout the season that you kind of were waiting to see that signature game from them. I think yesterday was that signature game from them. Mo Wilkerson has been a force, and he's proven that he's the second best defensive lineman in football. Sheldon Richardson continues to get better. He's now got 5 sacks in the last 2 games, in the last 3 games, and 2 forced fumbles. And now Leonard Williams, who is coming on very, very strong, and a lot of people had kind of made fun of the pick. And then when he hit that rookie wall, a lot of people were like, oh, look, he doesn't have the sacks that he needs. Oh, my God, it was such a bad pick. We should have taken somebody else. Leonard Williams gives the Jets 4 defensive linemen, and nobody and I'm talking about 4 very, very good to elite defensive linemen, and nobody in the league can do that. And the way you win in this league is by hitting the quarterback and by defending the back end. And right now, I'd argue that Denver has the best secondary in football, but the Jets combination of the front 4 and the back 4, I don't think any team right now in the league has that. What did you see from the defensive line, Paulie? Because I know you were telling everybody during the season, cool your brakes, don't call in the Williams a bust, not yet. And now here it is, he's kind of rewarding your faith a little bit like Stephen Ridley did yesterday. What are your thoughts on the defensive line and how they played last night?
Well, first off, let me say, let me reiterate my statements that I've said throughout the whole year, and I tweeted this out today. As a little regards to Leonard Williams, people like to base everything that a defensive lineman does, based off of sacks. And yes, sacks are fantastic. And I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I tweeted this out today that, and I don't care if I offended anyone or not, but if you're basing Leonard Williams's play off of sack numbers, then you clearly do not understand the game of football. What Leonard Williams is doing for this team, getting pressures, getting QB hits, forcing throws from quarterbacks, to make mistakes. I don't remember who was on the rush, but whoever came off the rush and forced Brady to throw that quick throw to Gronk, and Gronk wasn't ready and Revis picked it. Those are the things I want to see from a defensive line. I want to see them wrecking havoc and making quarterbacks make mistakes. And that's what this defensive line is doing. They're getting sacks here and there, but this defensive line is getting pressure and forcing quarterbacks to make mistakes, and that's what I want to see out of a defensive line. Leonard Williams is a man. A lot of people, don't have patience with rookies and forget that these are kids coming into a man's game. And yes, Leonard Williams did kind of hit a rookie wall, but he is a man now here in week 16 going to week 17. And this defensive line is starting to eat. Sheldon Richardson seems like he's starting to finally get into the groove with his swagger back after his suspension. Remember, he missed 4 games. Granted, we're in week 16, but he missed the first 4 weeks of the season. It takes you some time to finally get, your groove back. But he's looking good. Mo Wilkerson, he's getting his pressure. Snacks, even though he's playing 50% of his snaps, he's probably the best nose in all of football. So this defensive line is doing things. We're seeing pressure from Maldon, which I loved to see yesterday. He got another sack yesterday. And I just love what our defense is finally starting to do. And it seems like the offense and defense are both clicking together.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what they do is they make the defensive back job so much easier. For Marty, after slumping in the middle of the season, and then when Revis went down, I feel like he elevated his game and now continues to play really, really well. Darrelle Revis got an interception of his BFF Tom Brady yesterday. And here's the thing with Revis. I don't mean to cut you off.
I just wanted to say one thing. Going back to the D-line, what our D-line is able to do, it's allowing us to sometimes drop seven into coverage.
Right.
And I believe that is what happened on the interception. I haven't rewatched the game yet. I'm just going off of memory from yesterday. But I believe on the interception by Revis yesterday, we did drop 7 back. Don't quote me on that. But that's what it allows you to do when you have a D-line that can get pressure on the quarterback by themselves. It allows Todd Bowles to do some different things on defense and utilize his defense to ways that, support the back end. So that's all I wanted to say as well.
Yeah, piggybacking off of that and leading right into the interception. Revis, I think Darrelle Revis, and a lot of people fail to realize this because after DeAndre Hopkins burned him for that touchdown, a lot of people wrote him off and said, look, he's not as good, whatever the case may be. Darrelle Revis, to me, and just because I tend to not get caught up in the one-year thing, and Josh Norman was not very good last year, and now this year he's very good, right? So I don't get caught up in things like that. Same thing with Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman was good for a couple years, kind of struggled a little bit this year. Kenny Britt burned him yesterday on a really, really bad play by Sherman. Darrelle Revis is the second-best cornerback that I've ever seen, but the lowest that I could ever put him is third behind Charles Woodson and Deion Sanders. And so I think those are the 3 greatest cornerbacks that we've ever seen in our adult life. I think that Darrelle Revis is a guy who He was never particularly fast. It was always technique with him. And yesterday on the interception, he ran the route for the wide receiver. The wide receiver just didn't turn around. Revis did, because Revis knew that that was the route. And I think that that's going to help him when in a couple of years you see him start to transition to safety, or you see him, you know, start playing much more of a role similar to Charles Woodson did. But the Jets defense is cooking right now, and they're cooking at a time when you want to be playing your best ball. You want to be playing your best ball right now. You don't want to peak too early. And I think because the Jets have been theoretically in playoff mode for the last five games or so, they're peaking at the right time. Now, does that mean that they're about to go on a run and win a Super Bowl? No, that's not what it means. But what it does mean is, it does not bode well for Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills come Sunday. And it's a perfect segue into our second quarter because, lo and behold, the New York Jets need to beat Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills to get into the postseason for the first time since 2010. Now, Boobie Dixon, who, honest to God, I didn't even know he still played for the Bills, has come out and said that this is the Bills Super Bowl. Rex Ryan, who, again, full disclosure, I loved while he was here. I have no qualms against him, and Paulie knows this. I picked the Bills to go to the playoffs this year because I thought Rex Ryan was going to take a better defense and make them that much better. With that said, they have been bad this year because the defense has let them down. The defense has not been very good. However, I don't have this idea where I'm now going to root for Rex because he did so well here. I refuse to do that. That's not me. I root for the Jets. Now, I want the Jets to stomp a mud hole in them. I want the Jets to beat the Bills. I want them to punch their ticket to the playoffs because if there was ever any year that the New York Jets can make a run, this is the year. The AFC is banged up. The NFC, the dominant team was allegedly Carolina, and Carolina got rocked by Atlanta yesterday. You see Arizona, a team like Arizona, who I think is the best team in football, but Arizona has a tendency to lay an egg or two. We always worry about the health of Carson Palmer. Is it Green Bay? Maybe not, because Arizona smacked them around. Is it Minnesota? Well, 2 weeks ago, Seattle beat Minnesota by 40 points. So if there was ever a year for the Jets to make a run, it is this year. And now standing in their way is Rex Ryan. Paulie, you live in Bills country. What are your thoughts on the Jets having to get through the Bills on Sunday to punch their ticket to the postseason?
It makes me absolutely sick to my stomach. It's just, I believe in this team, and I think they are going to go up there and they are going to get a win. But just the utter thought of going to Buffalo and playing Rex Ryan with a playoff shot on the line just makes me sick. I hope we go up there and we just show up and completely embarrass them. There's so much talk of him losing the locker room and the locker room not playing for him. So, I mean, I don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, it sounds like Shady McCoy is not going to play. Marcell Dareus is banged up. They say that he thinks he might go. This is a game, just like I said before the Patriots game. If you want to be a playoff team, you have to win this game. Same thing goes for this week. If you want to be a playoff team, it's on the table for you, okay? You could, let's use a WWE reference right now, okay? You have the briefcase to cash in for the playoff championship, right? To get to the playoffs.
Right.
You have to cash in and you have to be successful, okay? You don't want to be remembered as the one guy who cashed in when they had a chance and they failed. You got to go up to Buffalo, you got to play your ex-coach who you wanted out. You got to beat him with his players, and you got to go out there and you got to win the game so you can punch your ticket to the playoffs. And that's what this team needs to do. So, like I said, I believe the Jets are going to go and get the win, but the whole scenario and situation just makes me sick to my stomach thinking that if we come up on the short end, it's going to be Rex Ryan swept us this year, and that's why this team is going to miss the playoffs. And I've said that having a top 10 offense for the New York Jets the first time since 1998, a top 5 defense for the first time since 1998, it would be an absolute travesty for this team of full of veteran players, hungry players like Brandon Marshall and Ryan Fitzpatrick to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Paulie in the sense that I don't think the Jets lose on Sunday. And I think that, one, because I do think that the Bills – again, are especially now, like a couple weeks ago, they were a tougher matchup. I don't think they're a tougher matchup now. No LeSean McCoy, who made things very, very easy for Tyrod Taylor in the first game.
And we've got Powell and Inunua back, guys we didn't have last matchup, and Kemble Thompson.
And Pryor. Right, right.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And
oh, my God. How could I forget
Pryor
missed that first Bills game?
Yeah. So the Jets are, and again, I said this a couple seconds ago. I think this is when you want to be playing your best ball. This is also when you want to be at your healthiest. And right now, the Jets are healthier. No Charles Clay for the Bills. McCoy might not play. Marcel Darius has a pinched nerve. He might not play. It's set up where, and Connor, who we're gonna about to have on in a couple seconds, kind of said this pretty much all offseason. He said that the Jets' playoff lives was going to rest on how they did in these two matchups against the Buffalo Bills. And sure enough, here we are, and it's week 17, and it's up to the Jets beating the Bills. Now, I think it's going to be a tough game, but I think it's a game that the Jets should win. Fitzpatrick is playing the best ball of his career. Brandon Marshall is playing arguably the best ball of his career. And other than Antonio Brown and Julio Jones, there may not be another receiver playing as good as Brandon Marshall is playing right now. And you don't want to waste that. You don't want to waste these career years from these guys because there's very little chance that you may get to duplicate this again. With that said, we're going to segue right into it and pause right here because I'm now about to welcome in my man, Connor Rogers of Turn on the Jets and Bleacher Report, who's been more than willing to spend a few minutes with us talking draft, talking Jets Bills, talking Jets Patriots. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Hey, man, what's going on?
Good. I was going to cue up some really, really good bachata for you, Connor, but I didn't know if you wanted to tell the world that you were Dominican just yet, man.
I was worried about that.
Brother, thank you for joining us on Monday after the Jets go out and quote unquote shock the world, I guess, and beat the Patriots 26-20 at MetLife. Wanted to get your thoughts on just what a big win for the Jets and just what you thought. How do you feel about seeing something out of the game and just anything that stood out to you yesterday as they ended up beating the Patriots?
Yeah, well, it's obviously a great win. I mean, the Jets have been in what's essentially their playoffs right now for the last 2 weeks. They have to win out to make the playoffs. And obviously they got a gift yesterday, the Ravens beating the Steelers. And if the Jets do win 11 games, they deserve to be a playoff team. So it's as simple as that. I'm not buying all of this that, you know, the Patriots handed the Jets the win yesterday. Not even just the overtime kickoff toss, but, you know, the players that played and didn't play and what they did and what they didn't do. The bottom line is the Patriots just got outcoached by a more overall rounded out team yesterday, which is the Jets. You know, obviously when Amendola and Edelman are back and they do have injuries everywhere else too, it might be a little different, but this is a very talented Jets team playing a lot of players playing at a very high level, some career levels. When you look at guys like Anunua, Tompkins, even Marshall right now, Decker, but obviously Fitzpatrick, I think the tackles were much better yesterday. Giacomini's had a lot of struggles this year and even Brick. But they were solid yesterday. Chandler Jones was kind of absent all game yesterday, it seems like, for the most part. Obviously, the defense of the Patriots had the one touchdown. But when you look, that's just a small sample size. I think coming at it, that's such a confidence-boosting win. I think the Jets know what they have to do next week. I'm not buying into, you know, oh, this is the perfect story ending with Rex. And going to Buffalo is tough, without a doubt. But the Bills are pretty banged up, too. And they just haven't been a very good football team these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%, Con. I think that the Jets – And before you came on, I touched on this with Paulie. The Jets have had a couple of signature wins here, and I'll touch on this a bit. Them beating Dallas, a team that a lot of people thought was a Super Bowl contender before the season, I think can amount to a signature win just because of how they won. Came out sluggish, and Fitzpatrick was able to win it at the end. Then you have to beat the Giants, who I feel like, and I touched on this when we spoke on the Turn on the Jets podcast last week, I feel like this is a win that the Jets were – these are ghosts that the Jets were trying to exercise from when Victor Cruz broke from Marty's tackle and took it to the end zone. It seemed like they were trying to erase that from memory. And then now to go out and beat the Ravens the way they did on what Paulie and I both described as a bonehead mistake by Matthew Slater. Do you get the sense that just based off of what you've heard that was an honest mistake, like they meant to kick the ball off, or was he confused by the ref? Because there's been a lot of weird conspiracy theories out there so far.
No, I have no idea why they kicked the ball off, but I definitely think that was the plan from Belichick. I don't think he's covering up for Slater. I think it's pretty clear when you go back and watch it again. Slater knew what he was told to do. He said, guess what, you know, we're kicking the ball off. He wanted to pick the direction, which you can only do to start the game. You can't do that in overtime. The rules change there, and a lot of people don't know that. But when you watch the audio, Slater is confused because he thought it's like the beginning of the game where you get to pick what way you're kicking and all of that. So I don't really understand why they would do that. It's kind of a lack of respect, to be honest with you. When you're looking at probably the best wide receiver tandem, I think Jacksonville's is pretty awesome too. But when you look at Marshall and Decker this year, And when you look at the complementary parts, like Powell and Nunua and Tompkins stepping up and the offensive line playing pretty well, I have no idea why you would kick the ball. It was really bizarre. It was kind of the twilight zone yesterday when you're seeing the Patriots run trick plays in the first half against the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
I know
they
run trick plays even
cat.
In the playoffs. They ran the wildcat. They did that flea flicker. It just came off really desperate. And I know a lot of, you know, Patriots fans. And listen, Dio, you talk to me all the time on the podcast. You know I'm a pessimist with the Jets. And I'm not biased.
Right.
I give credit where it's due. But the bottom line is it was a desperate play style in the first half from New England yesterday that we really hadn't seen in a while. And I think it's as simple as that New England honestly thought, and Bill Belichick said it today in a very frustrated tone, that they thought they were going to kick off the ball, stop the Jets in their own side of the field, and then get the ball in field position, run two or three pass plays, probably through Gronkowski, and kick the field goal and win the game. They thought that's literally what Belichick said their plan was. Kind of believable when you look at how their franchise is run. You know, one of the smartest coaches in the history of football, but they just really didn't respect the Jets' offense at the worst possible time.
Yeah, agree. And let's go ahead, Paul.
I just wanted to ask Connor one thing. If I told you at the beginning of the season, after 16 weeks of football, the only team in the NFL to have 2+ offensive touchdowns in every game this season was the New York Jets, what would you say?
First off, I would obviously be shocked. I would also expect much more of them coming from Chris Ivory. That's the craziest thing. I thought this was the year Ivory, assuming he stays healthy, which he struggles to do consistently, would go for, you know, 12 to 1,300 and 10-plus touchdowns. And I don't even know where he's at right now. But to expect this kind of production from not only Marshall, who we've seen it in the past, but at 31 you expect some kind of decline, and he's almost been at a career playing level right now. But the offensive concepts they run with Decker, it's just honestly brilliant in the red zone. And I talked about it in over summer that one thing the Jets knew, and Maccagnan knew this, and Bowles knew this, and Gailey knew this, was that their red zone offense and red zone efficiency had to be upgraded. And that was the main reason to go out and get a guy like Marshall and involve a guy like Nunua, who I believe had 12 touchdowns his senior year in Nebraska. When you look at, he was a red zone threat in Nebraska and ended up being a 6th-round pick. You know, he was a better player than a 6th-round pick. He just needed to, you know, obviously develop a little bit. And when it comes down to it, the Jets were one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in the red zone last year. We're talking about converting to touchdowns, not field goals. And they went out in the offseason and had a plan to fix that, and it's been honestly brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. And Marshall has been huge, and it's part of the reason, it's a big reason why they're the number one team in red zone efficiency this year. Connor, you released an article on Turn on the Jets, your first inside the green room. Leading into the draft season, which, again, normally this started a little bit earlier for Jet fans than we've liked the last couple of years. This year, though, again, Shanahan's a draft lifer, and this is how he's going to replenish a lot of that middle class for the Jets, because Tannenbaum tore that down, and there was none of that before he got here. So you released an article where you talked about the Sugar Bowl between Notre Dame and Ohio State. Paulie's going to give you a bit of grief about Ohio State and being a Michigan guy. Don't take it personal. I deal with it every week. It's fine. We'll get past it. But I'm going to focus on the Notre Dame guy.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, this was like a double-edged sword, because it was either get stuck with Notre Dame or get stuck with Ohio State. And
you have no way. No winning.
Yeah. So Delvin told me I was stuck with one, and I tried to get him to do both, but I got stuck with Ohio State. So we're going to try and do this.
There we go, exactly. So you ranked 5 Notre Dame prospects. Tavare Russell, you ranked him in your top 64. He's a cornerback from Ohio State. Nick Martin, the starting center, you also ranked him in your top 64. Romeo Okara, the defensive end, you ranked him in your top 120. Elijah Schmidt, the safety, you ranked him around 5. And then Chris Brown, the wide receiver, you ranked him around 6. Those 5 prospects that you ranked, and you gave the top 3 really, really good grades, because I know how difficult a grader you are. So for them to be in your top 120 is really, really lofty praise. How do you feel they fit into the Jets' long-term draft plans, and could you see the Jets tackle them next year?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at a guy like Russell, he doesn't really get a lot of talk because, number one, he was academically ineligible and suspended for an entire year before this year, and he came back, and he was their number one corner. And when you're playing, you know, corner in a defense that includes guys like Jalen Smith, Sheldon Day, I mean, they have players across the board that make plays. You know, you don't really look at the pass defense as much. And Kavari Russell has been a really good player. And I think his biggest downfall, besides getting hurt at the end of the year and missing the Stanford game, which, you know, kind of kept Notre Dame out of the playoff, that would have been a nice spotlight for him, is that there's so many good corners at the front of this class. You look at Clemson's Mackenzie Alexander, Florida's Vernon Hargreaves, Florida State has Jalen Ramsey, who should probably play free safety, but he is listed as a corner. But Kavari Russell, he's got really good technique. You know, he takes on the opposition's number one guy time to time, and I think he's a really good player. I think he's probably going to go at the end of round one or round two, and I think, you know, he's a guy that he's – I don't think he's ever going to be that top shutdown corner, but when you're looking for a defense that relies heavily on their man-to-man pass defense, I think he could be a really good number two corner. I know I had Nick Martin in there, and listen, for the Jets, we're talking about Nick Mangold. Every year it's like, well, when is Nick Mangold going to decline? And I don't see it personally. I think he's been one of the best centers in the game year after year, and we haven't seen that decline, but at some point you have to think about center at least, and – it's always good to be a year early than a year late when you're talking about filling needs. And I think the Jets have kind of hit on that a little bit. When you look at the guards they've taken over the last couple of years, Winters is really stepping up when Willie Colon went down. And you're looking at other receivers going down and Nuno stepping up. It's always good to build depth. And I think Nick Martin, Zach's brother, is another player that's going to be in that top 64 and could be a really good center prospect. I mean, across the board, obviously, we could talk forever. When you look at guys like Dio, that wasn't bad. It's Elijah Shumi. I don't know if I could say right all the time. It's a hard one. But the Jets don't really need box safeties, and that's something that they've built great depth with. You look at Deion Bailey and Rontez Miles behind Calvin Pryor, I think they're going to be just fine there.
Baldy, you're up.
Yeah, so here comes the difficult part. I'm going to give you, you know, the five Ohio State prospects and give us your takes on them. Two players I do like at safety for Ohio State, because I am unbiased. I do like Von Bell and Tyvus Powell. Love watching them play, obviously, being following the Big Ten as I am, and you know I love secondary play. Tight end Nick Vannett. Wide receiver now, Braxton Miller. And Cardale Jones, which he has the intangibles, but really struggled this year when he played. So what's your take on those prospects coming out of Ohio State?
Well, you look at the safety tandem. I mean, it's a great tandem, and those guys can do a little bit of everything. I think they're clear cut. At least, you know, day two guys, you never know. Some of these guys sneak into day one. We've seen crazier things. I think right now they're clear cut day two players that have a future at safety in the league. I think they work very well off of each other. And I also think when you're looking at the tight end position, Vannett obviously isn't featured in the Ohio State offense. That, you know, you have Braxton Miller, you have Michael Thomas, obviously. You know, Elliott, but it's just hard to get a guy like that targets, but he's a bigger player. It seems like year after year, the Jets just kind of fill in the blocking tight end position, you know, with a one-year deal to one of the most random players in the league. We've seen Hartsock, Mulligan, Kellen Davis. So it would be nice to see them invest in a, you know, bigger frame tight end at some point. I think Amaro is going to play a lot of move tight end when he's back. If he can get on the field, it seems like Anunoby was really, you know, stepped up and taken over what was his role in the beginning of the year. And the interesting one to me, both interesting, is Braxton Miller and Cardale Jones. Because when you look at Braxton Miller, I think you have a lot of uncertainty. And same with Cardale Jones. When I talked about the safeties in Vannett, you kind of know what they are. And they're players that are going to be starters in the league in, you know, 2 to 3 years. When you look at Jones and Miller, Braxton Miller, a lot of his plays are manufactured touches where they just want to get the ball in his hands and make a play. But can he create separation on his own is the biggest question mark. We know he's an athlete. You know he could break tackles. He's dangerous with the ball in his hands. But how much can you really value a guy that isn't a true wide receiver yet? And that's why it's kind of a round four grade right now. We saw guys like Randall Cobb make the switch and do it really well, but there's no guarantee that that's what he's going to project to be. And Cardale Jones right now, it's just raw skill set. He has a deep arm. He's big. He can run, but he just can't read coverages. He forces a lot of balls. I don't know how smart of a guy he is in terms of grasping an NFL playbook, you know, that's to be determined. But right now, when you're looking at a guy like that, I don't see how you could take him higher than round four.
And I got one more point to sneak in here with the Ohio State. He's not on the list, but Zeke Elliott, which is a hot name. A lot of people are against taking running backs in the first round. Saw it worked out well for the Rams, not so much for the Chargers this year with Melvin Gordon, but your take with where the Jets may be picking as the way it looks as the season comes to an end, maybe looking at somebody like Zeke Elliott.
Yeah, I don't love taking running backs round one, especially in the top 20, but when you look at the Jets, it really comes down to one rule when you're going to take a running back in the first round is, you know, does he ever have to come off the field? What are his weaknesses? And when you look at Zeke Elliott, he's one of the better blocking running backs I've ever seen, and that's, you know, not to discount how fast he is, his ability to catch the ball, his ability just as a pure runner. He's a great player, and when you look at the Jets, this is a team that's they're going to be picking in the bottom half of the draft. That's what it's come down to right now. They're hoping to finish the season with 11 wins and make a playoff run. And this is a team also that will have no running backs projected to be on the roster at the end of the, after the season's over. When you look at Ivory, Ridley, and Powell are all set to be free agents. So when you look at Elliott, he, like I said, he's a guy that can catch the ball and block, and he's just a great runner. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's a really good fit. I think he plugs in really well with Chan Gailey's offense, and I mean, he seems pretty durable, and the biggest problem with the Jets running backs is all three of them just aren't very durable.
That's a great point.
I agree, for sure.
Yeah, and it's something that a lot of people have been talking about, just with Chris Ivory's potential price tag. Is it worth – and granted, he's going to end up having a career year here this year, and he's turned into a reliable pass catcher. But do you want – exactly what Connor said, do you want to have a guy that you constantly have to take off the field? Connor, using a bit of hindsight here, now, we've had two Idzik drafts and one by Matt, right? And now it's, and I love it because I love seeing guys that people wrote off when Idzik drafted them becoming contributors now, like Quincy Ndua, like Trevor Riley. I still have high hopes for Jason Morrow. Calvin Firestone is a functional starter. In hindsight, what picks over the last 3 years for the Jets made zero sense to you and meaning that you, from jump, you were like, yeah, this isn't going to work? And off the top of your head, and again, it may be tougher to do, but are there any players at the spots that the Jets took guys? For example, the owner went in the top 10 and they ended up taking Sheldon with the second first-round pick. Are there any players that you would have swapped at that pick? Like, for example, taking maybe somebody else instead of Milner or taking somebody else instead of Pryor? Just using a bit of hindsight here.
Yeah, I mean, not to even be that picky, because I actually really liked Calvin Pryor before the draft, and I saw the value there. I said he was going to go in the range of 18 to 35, and I think it's worked out really well for the Jets. I loved Brandon Cooks that year. I thought, you know, he's exactly what I expected him to be. When you watch him, he smoked the coverage yesterday. I think it was actually Nick Marshall, the former Auburn quarterback for the Jaguars, playing corner yesterday. I mean, he's a guy that can win on the outside, and people looked at his size coming out that year and said, listen, this is a slot receiver. They were 100% wrong, but the Jets, you know, Pryor's panned out, so it's really hard to nitpick there. Sheldon Richardson has obviously been great. That year, I thought Tyler Eifert would have been another nice fit, and he's finally broken out this year and been the real weapon at tight end that the Bengals expected him to be. My favorite pick in the last couple of years was Lorenzo Maldon. I had him 19th overall last year on my big board, and he went in the third round, which I can't really explain that. I don't know. I know other people didn't value him as a first-round player, but I think he's more than just an edge rusher. I think he's a guy that can develop into an off-ball linebacker down the stretch. But as a rookie, the Jets want to keep things simple for him right now, and he's kind of flourishing in that situational pass rusher role. I mean, he played 27 snaps yesterday, 4 quarterback hurries. He's getting after it. So I think that was just a really great pick. And the biggest question mark right now is Jason Morrow. I mean, what are we going to get out of Jason Morrow in the next 2 years? And he's a guy that has flashed. I mean, he had a lot of catches versus Denver last year. I believe it was actually 10. So when you look at when he's featured in the offense, he makes plays, but can he stay on the field and will he get a chance to be featured in the offense is the biggest question mark now.
Especially with Quincy Ndua, just how he's developed, which again, hats tip to you because he was a guy who you were much higher on and you even thought that when the Jets got him in the sixth round, despite taking Saunders and Evans, you said that he was going to be the best one out of the bunch and it's proven to be true.
Absolutely.
I'm going to take you to Vegas so we can bet on some money, son. Damn it.
Well, once in a while, I get one right. But the thing was a noon one. Not in the players. I mean, I thought he was really good, too, for Nebraska. I just think that he was a team captain. He was a red zone threat. He's a guy that blocks. And at the worst case with a noon one, you were getting a special teams player. And, you know, it turns out that he's much more than that.
Yeah, he's definitely been an asset in Gailey's system with his blocking abilities. His hands will get better. You know, there's a few balls I thought yesterday should have had, but he made up for it in overtime. And I'm thrilled to have him as part of the offense.
Well,
so,
you know what the funny thing is that
yeah.
A lot of people think he does have bad hands. I will say that, but it's tracking the ball. He always puts his hands out at weird times, and he's either too early or too late. And I think they have to work on that. If he learns how to track the ball, the catching will definitely come down the field.
Yeah, yesterday it looked like he was gator chomping at that one ball. I was like, what's going on? So I got a question for you, Connor. Is there any prospect in this draft that you would consider, you know, moving Mo Wilkerson for to trade up to get, you know, with the contract issue that's going on? You know, we don't know if we're going to tag him, sign him. You know, it's really up in the air right now. So hypothetically speaking, is there anybody you would consider doing that for?
Yeah, it's always a really hard argument to make to trade a proven top talent for an unproven top prospect. That's the hardest thing. And the question is, too, what are you going to get back from Mo Wilkerson? Because a team that takes him on knows they have to pay him. That's the bottom line. And if the Jets can get a first-round pick, I think it comes down to where do you want to trade Mo Wilkerson? No. But do you have to? Yeah, you might. You might have to trade him because when you look at how good Leonard Williams looks, and listen, I think Sheldon Richardson had a really slow start when he came back from suspension. I don't know if that's, you know, not being in football shape right away, but he's really turned it on, and we know he can play inside. We've seen it before. So do you want to keep Mo Wilkerson? Yes, but I think they have to trade him at some point because I don't think they're going to be able to pay all these defensive linemen up front, and his value is as high as it's ever going to be right now. So if you get that first-round pick, it comes down to really two options for the Jets. You can package your first-round picks and move up for a quarterback like Jared Goff and let him learn behind Fitz. I know that's taboo in the NFL now, but taking a quarterback in the first round and letting him sit for a year or two is not the worst thing in the world. And then the other thing is, too, you keep the two first-round picks and you solve offensive tackle, which has to be done. There's no excuse. Free agency would be great, but you can never bank on it. So you solve offensive tackle and you grab an edge rusher. So, I mean, the Jets, if they can get another pick, it works out perfectly for them because they have the needs to fill and they have to think about quarterback down the road at some point. But, I mean, if you're able to keep Wilkerson, you have one of the top defensive linemen in the league.
So, actually, that scenario that you just mentioned is perfect. So, say the Jets deal him, but they don't trade up to get Goff, and they end up with, let's say, the 23rd pick is, like, make the playoffs and then, you know, make a little run here. So, 23rd pick, and then they trade Mo for, let's say, the 13th. In your ideal scenario, this is like your draft, like ideal fantasy, who do the Jets take at 13 and at 23 that you would say, you know what, they can sit out the rest of this draft, but these two prospects, that's a win?
Yeah, at 13, I would take Noah Spence at Eastern Kentucky, a former Ohio State player. I think he's just an absolute stud of an edge rusher. He did have a drug problem at Ohio State, but he's been clean for a while. He's a freak talent that's going to drop because of his former issues, but It's a guy that is just an absolute stud, and the Jets need that stud edge rusher. And when you look at 23, you have so many options. You could take an offensive tackle like Taylor Decker, Jack Conklin, maybe Ronnie Stanley slides. There's been questions about his strength now. Or you go back to what Paulie said, you solve running back with Ezekiel Elliott and get the best back in the draft. It's a no-brainer.
Right.
That's true. And that actually would be a really, really crazy draft if they walked out of the draft with Noah Spence and Ezekiel Elliott. That'd be pretty good haul.
You're getting probably two top 5 to 10 players in the draft with picks, you know, closer to the bottom half.
Yeah, and Noah Spence, absolutely. I mean, you and I were very high on Marcus Peters last year, and I kind of feel like Noah Spence is in that category where it's the guy that honestly should have been
top 5.
Yeah,
it's the same situation.
People,
you're talking about
– yeah.
Yes. 100%, and it's, you know, you look at what Trey Waynes has done this year, and you look at what Marcus Peters has done. It's sometimes you have to take the gamble and roll the dice, and for the Chiefs, it's worked out brilliantly.
And that's the thing, like,
go ahead, Paulie.
Oh wait, I just want to, and I was high on Peters as well. There's times where people are like, oh, we don't want to draft a guy with character issues, but sometimes you have to, you know, trust in yourself and what you've got in your locker room and in your organization that you can control that and get the ability of the player. I mean, Marcus Peters, we haven't heard a thing about him, and he's having a ridiculous rookie season. And a guy like Noah Spence is a stud. If you get him in there and you have your locker room, you know, take him over with the chemistry you have in there, you trust in those guys, then it won't be an issue.
There you go, exactly. Now, Colin, we'll let you go with this last question. Now, if Cincinnati wins tonight, then the Jets are going to be playing for the 5th seed come Sunday, and a date with the Houston Texans, barring some miracle playoff scenario where the Colts end up winning the South, because I think 10 things need to happen in order for the Colts to end up winning the division. But the Jets win, Cincinnati wins tonight, Jets win Sunday, the Jets are the 5th seed, and they travel to Houston. If Cincinnati doesn't win, if Denver wins tonight, then the Jets are theoretically playing for the 6th seed, barring late outcomes. And that would probably mean either a trip to Kansas City or a trip to Denver. Who, again, and now Joe tweeted this earlier, and I agree with him in a sense. I think the Jets' best-case scenario is drawing Houston and then finding a way to draw Cincinnati in the second round, just because I don't trust A.J. McCarron. With that said, how do you think the Jets match up with, one, the Texans, and should that be the matchup, and should they get past the Texans, either playing Cincinnati or Denver or even Kansas City, who still has a shot at winning the AFC West?
Yeah, if I was the Jets, I would want the Texans. I think that the one big difference, too, is if Brian Hoyer's back, which he will be, the Texans can't really throw the ball downfield. And if you can't throw the ball downfield against the Jets, which the Patriots really couldn't yesterday, you see what happens. They just beast up front. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. The Jets lost to the Texans. We know that. This is a different Jets team right now. They're healthy. The offense is clicking on all cylinders. And like I said, I'm not calling T.J. Yates, you know, a better quarterback than Brian Hoyer, but I do not see Brian Hoyer being able to do much against the Jets' defense. I think they'll have a much better strategy against Nuke Hopkins. And I think that's the matchup you want. Obviously, Kansas City's a little tough because they do have the defense, especially if Justin Houston and Tamba Ali are healthy in the postseason. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think the Jets' tackles can stop them. That's what scares you there. But can Alex Smith do anything against the Jets' defense? I haven't really seen him do much all year. So, and I like I said, I love Marcus Peters, but Brandon Marshall has made – much better corners or much more pro-ready corners look really bad this year. So you kind of have the complex there. I think it's a wash, but if it had to pick, I would say the Texans just because of Brian Hoyer.
Absolutely, absolutely. Paulie, you have any follow-up questions before we can let Connor go back to worrying about why the Yankees just traded for Aroldis Chapman and the Mets let you walk?
The Mets don't do anything, so.
No follow-up, just I'm looking forward to all Connor's draft content as always. If you don't follow Connor, you're really losing. His at is at @CRogers_NFL. He has a Google document linked right in his Twitter page with all draft information. I literally live on that. I view
That's
it all
great.
The time because the draft is what I live for, what Connor lives for, what many live for. So, you know, Connor does great work, and if you know a lot about the draft or even a little and want to learn more, Connor's information is where you want to get it from.
And
thanks, guys. I really appreciate that.
Well, and I'm going to say that and I'm not just blowing hot air up Connor because Connor's my brother off of this.
Neither am I.
Off of this. But understand that in about a year or so, Connor's going to be like the Matthew Berry of drafts, right? And so you kind of want to get in on the ground floor here. You want to get in on the ground floor because when we go to all these draft parties, they see Paulie and I with, like, our dogs and Connor leading the way on the red carpet. You're going to wish, man, I should have followed him when Paulie and Dalvin said to follow him a year ago. Now I'm on the outside looking in and I don't know anything. So understand, follow Connor at @CRogers_NFL. Matt Miller, who I love, who does awesome work at NFL Draft Scout, ranked Connor in his, like it's like the Forbes 500 of draft experts. Like, that's a
this
big
is true.
Deal. So, Con,
this
yeah,
is true.
Con, I'm entirely happy for all the success that you're having, man. I'm wishing you all the best. You know, I'm with you 100%. And thank you for joining us on this Monday, man, as we get ready to hopefully trounce the Bills come Sunday and punch our ticket to the playoffs. And kudos to you for picking the Texans to win the division, man. That's huge.
Yeah, I actually got one. That's at least I got that if they're saying the Jets would win 7-8 games. So, you know what? Thanks, guys. You guys are the best. Keep it up. This is a great podcast. I love it. You guys are killing it. So thanks for having me on, and we'll talk again
soon, brother.
All
right? Yeah, appreciate
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
All right. Later, boys.
Later. So, yeah, so that was it took us through our second and our third quarter. Great insight from Tom there about a lot of problems we're going to see, especially here through bowl season. I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, so I haven't cared about college football in about 12, 13 years. But I do watch strictly for the scouting process of it, and I've learned a lot from Tom. And also even from my conversations with Paulie, because there's things that Paulie will text me about a lot of prospects that, like, I'll give you a perfect example. Last year, Paulie had texted me about Bud Dupree around September of last year. And now I had kind of heard a little bit about Bud Dupree, but I was like, man, a defensive lineman from a basketball school, I'm a little worried about this. The only one that stands out is Julius Peppers, right? But then I started watching the tape, and Bud Dupree, who's had a really nice year for the Steelers so far and continues his long line of, like, elite linebackers for them, is just continuing to get better and better. And Paulie was the first guy to kind of mention it to me and made me hit to it. So I know a lot of people think that the draft is very, very daunting. A lot of people are going to say, man, why are we talking about the draft? The Jets are in the middle of a playoff push. But I touched on this a little bit earlier, and I'll elaborate on it first. The NFL is structured in this way. Your rosters are structured like this. There's the upper class, there's the middle class, and the lower class. Your upper class are your stars, which the Jets have a ton of, and Revis, Marshall, I think Decker's a star, Wilkerson, Richardson, you know, like, those are your subs. Those are the guys. Cromartie, even, those are your guys. Mangold. Then in the middle class are the depth guys, are the guys like Fitzpatrick, like Iverson, Bilal Powell, and a guy like Quincy Enunwa. And then you have the lower class guys, which is just like your contributors, your depth guys. For a long time, the Jets had no middle class. It was very, very top-heavy, nothing in the middle. And now
it's been exciting
to
see a lot of the guys. Yeah, go for it.
Well, that's because we were signing, like, the rugby guys to be our third-string tight ends, and then they needed to play, and just things like that. Our depth was never filled out, and that's what McKagan is going to be working on over the next year and a half, 2 years, to build the depth to go with the talent along with the players he drafts. And, you know, like you touched on, you know, people are like, well, why are we talking about the draft? We got a big game coming up. You know, regardless of anything, the draft is probably the biggest part of the NFL other than the regular season and the playoffs. When you really think about it, it's where you build your team. It's where you get the foundation. It's where you get your young players, you know, to build up your roster. So it's always good and fun to talk draft, and having somebody like Connor on, you don't pass up that opportunity for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's going to be good because now you're seeing a lot of the guys who John Itzik drafted start to contribute, right? And then now you're seeing the guys that Mac drafted contribute as well. And I'm especially happy for guys like Brian Winters, who were written off by the fan base, guys like Calvin Pryor, who were written off by the fan base, Quincy Enunwa, who, again, and this is why coaching is so important. And Paulie and I are WWE guys also, so like if you follow us on Twitter, which you probably do, you see us talking about WWE a lot. And we talk about basketball a lot, too. Paulie's a Bulls fan. I'm a Mavs fan. But you see how important coaching is and things like that, where you take marginal guys and fringe guys and then they get elevated, right? Connor touched on this earlier about, like, guys having career years. You see a guy like Quincy Enunwa, who was relegated to special teams duty last year because he couldn't get on the field ahead of Jeff Cumberland. Jeff Cumberland was stealing all these snaps. Yesterday, Jeff Cumberland played zero offensive snaps, only special teams. That was by far the best Christmas present I could have ever asked for, because I've seen Jeff Cumberland drop passes that a regular blind seeing eye dog would catch, and Cumberland's dropped them. So I think that a lot of people need to realize that this draft, not the one coming up, is so important for the Jets to continue their success. I'll give you the Jets. A lot of people want to talk about the Jets being modeled after the Seahawks, and while I think that that's a great aspiration, I don't think that that's the team you want to be like. I think the Jets most closely resemble the Arizona Cardinals, and here's why. The Cardinals have a bunch of veteran guys, and then what did they do? They drafted David Johnson this year. They drafted John Brown a couple years ago. Drafted Michael Floyd to go with Larry Fitzgerald. They drafted their offensive line, 3/5 of their starter all through the draft. The only they have a free agent import in Mike Iupati. Their fifth starter was also a free agent import. But other than that, 3/5 of the offensive line are free agents. They brought in Dwight Freedy as a free agent edge rusher, but Deion Buchanan plays a lot of linebacker in that defense. Tyrann Mathieu, who before the injury was probably going to be the defensive player of the year, now Revis has a chance to kind of take it back from him because Revis was the early front runner. Again, another draft guy. Patrick Peterson, a draft guy. Jerron Powers is a free agent guy. So what they've done is they've used the draft to supplement that middle class for their team, so that way their veterans can have a longer shelf life. Carson Palmer, who I think is an MVP candidate, has had a really, really good year. But John Brown is such an integral part of that team that I can't take John Brown off that team and say that they're still 11-3, or 12-3. Although I do think that they've done a really, really good job of just drafting and signing guys. So the Jets need to do that, and then they have the coaches in place to elevate these guys. They turned Quincy Enunwa into a tight end. Who would have thought that? Who would have thought a 6'3", 230-pound receiver could play tight end? Well, Jan Gaddis is when he ran David Nelson out there as an H-back, and now he's doing the same thing with Quincy Enunwa. And so I'm excited to see guys like Jason Morrow, who people have written off. I'm excited to see guys like Dee Milner, who I know, again, can't stay healthy because he's made out of toothpicks. But seeing him under proper coaching, and that's not a jab at Rex Ryan. That's not a, oh, my God, everything that went wrong here is Rex to blame. No, that's not what I'm saying. I know you're listening, Alf. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. This is kind of directed at you, but it's kind of directed at the dudes that you retweet that constantly take, like, these, like, subtle jabs at Paulie and I and the rest of us that we say that we were glad that Rex was gone. I think that a lot of people need to realize that just because I appreciate what Rex did, and Paulie's the same, just because we appreciate what he did for the first 3 years, doesn't mean we don't realize that he had to go, because him and Isaac together did not fit. They did some good things. They gave us some guys. Eric Decker doesn't sign here if it's not for Rex Ryan, right? Chris Ivory said that he wanted to be traded here to play for Rex Ryan. Now Chris Ivory's having a career year because better coaches decided how to use him better. And so I think that's something that you guys should kind of remember when we're talking about, like, prospects or where guys fit or how players are doing. Coaching is such an integral part of this. And Todd Bowles, and I owe an apology to Paulie because I said this on our first show, I kind of felt like Bowles had a little bit of Rex Ryan in him, right? He was talking very, very stubbornly about, oh, I'm going to play my defensive line. We're going to run a 3-4. That's what we're going to do. And you've seen that that's not the passion.
And it's been phenomenal to see. The adjustments have been phenomenal to see. So I had to see you, Paulie, for hitting it right on the head from week one when we started this show 4 months ago about just how good a hire Bowles has been. I'm thoroughly impressed by what he's done with these players, and I know you are as well. You can touch on that.
Yeah, just to touch on the coaching thing, and like you said, this isn't a shot at Rex. You know, this isn't – yes, I was a big Rex fan. Everybody knows it. It was time for him to go. But I want to touch on something that happened early on in training camp when our receivers were running a drill, and I can't remember which beat writer it is now because, I mean, come on now. It's almost January. This was in August. It might have been Connor Hughes. It may have been Nimbley. But they tweeted that they saw the wide receivers going through drills that they had never seen before. Now, I've gone to training camp, and I've been to training camp almost every year of Rex's tenure. And there was times where I just saw regular wide receiver drills, but run a route and catch a ball. But, I mean, from videos that guys were posting, it's, you know, you've seen hands-on coaching. You saw different drills. They were using pads and different things. And like I said, it was different from what I saw during the Rex tenure. Just something simple
right.
like that. And it's more hands-on coaching. I feel like there's guys in there that know what they're doing. You know, I for one, and I admitted it today, I was against the Chan Gailey hiring. I was like, oh, what's he doing? Guy's been out of the league for 2 years. Chan
right.
Gailey's been a godsend. I was 1,000% wrong, and I'm glad to admit that. And I don't like to admit that I'm wrong. But the Chan Gailey
correct.
Hiring was wonderful. So coaching, it's just nice to see players being coached. I mean, you got guys like Brian Winters, who clearly wasn't coached right. And look at what he's doing, filling in for the injured Willie Colon. He's been, for the most part, give or take a few penalties and a missed assignment here or there. He's been really solid. A guy, like you said, like Quincy, they decided to move him to H-back tight end. And the guy's blocking, making big plays for us. The Dallas game made a huge catch. Yesterday in overtime made a huge catch. We're waiting for Milner. We're waiting for Amaro. But guys are starting to develop, and it's coaching. It really is. I mean, you can't just sit here and say that, oh, you know, Quincy Enunwa's just all of a sudden the light went on and he figured it out. No, he was coached up and he was coached properly and is being used to his abilities. And like I said, and you said, not a shot at Rex, but Rex is not a very good coach. You know, that's what it boils down to. And hopefully we see more of that on Sunday.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that you look at the Bills, and there's a lot of talent on that team, a lot of talent. Arguably, it's not the best offense that Rex has had, certainly up there with the Santonio Holmes, Braylon Edwards, Jericho Cotchery offense that he had here in 2010. I think that you saw, and kudos to Rex for being able to find a scenario where he could develop Tyrod Taylor safely. I don't think Tyrod is the guy just yet. But I do think that you've seen some positive strides. You've also seen some things from a guy who's starting for the first time in his professional career. With that said, there's a lot of talent on that team, way too much talent to have 6 wins. And that's probably what's going to happen. They're going to finish 6-10, 7-9. 7-9 when the Jets beat them on Sunday. And I think that a lot of Bills fans are upset, and rightfully so, because they were told that this was going to be different, and Rex guaranteed that they were going to the playoffs. And that stick gets old very quick. Guys, thank you so much for joining Paulie and I on a Victory Monday edition of Jetstream Radio. Now, because the Jets won, we're going to leave you with a very, 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 very dope call. It was from Bob Wisbusen from ESPN, who did the ESPN radio call, the Eric Tech touchdown to end the game. And honestly, this was so crazy, and I've heard it like a bunch of times today, so we're going to leave you with that. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you to Connor for tuning in
as always.
As well.
Thank you, everyone.
Jetstream Radio, your favorite podcast, his favorite podcast, and we'll be back next Monday punching our ticket to the playoffs. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful night.
And a happy new year.